Hello.
I have to remember to not make as many dirty jokes as I do on the other podcast on this one.
So I said hello, and then you dropped in with that. So that's
our Hey, you say we were jumping in cold. We were jumping in cold. Might as well.
Sorry, Martin. I didn't mean to jump.
Are we recording?
Yeah, we are.
Oh.
Oops. So to my right, everybody, is the filthy-mouthed Martin.
That is me.
Actually, what we're doing here, guys, we're doing something really special. We're going to do a little quick recap of the season. What is it? Season 8? Premiere?
Season 8, yeah.
Season 8 premiere of Doctor Who, which is called Deep Breath. And my guests today are the co-hosts of the, extremely popular.
I'm having something like that. Yeah.
I'm having trouble with words today. Maybe starting cold wasn't the best idea.
Words are
you
hard.
You can edit, right?
Words are hard.
Can you?
Yeah, I can edit.
Do you guys like to edit?
Oh, I love to
edit. Because the other podcast I'm in doesn't like to edit.
I don't like...
Editing is not allowed.
It's just going to be weird, like, blank moments that every time you speak. It's just, like, they're silent.
Just cuts off.
Let's get this straight in, like, a really joking, kind of rib to the elbow. Kind of. The other podcast, Jen, doesn't like to edit unless the host has said something dumb.
Yes, that's the only time that gets edited. He knows it, too. We give him a hard time.
But you are the co-host of the very popular Chaos After Dark podcast.
That's correct.
What's going on over at Chaos After Dark?
Well, we are now part of Fanboy Nation, so you can definitely check out our podcast through them. And just having a lot of fun being dirty mouthed over there. So it's a little hard. I'm going to have to, really reel it back in like I do.
Well, you know, I guess we are a little bit more, I wouldn't say family friendly, but we don't swear as much just because it doesn't come up. But I mean, if it does come up or you need to, by all means.
Well, is it still like foul mouth? I mean, it's not so much swear words. It's just the topic sometimes are a little.
Yeah, we try to keep
a little provocative.
We try to keep it.
Us.
It would go there anyways if it really has to.
We don't always go there, but we allow ourselves the space.
I feel like on my podcast, I try not to go there just because when it does, I really want it to be worth it. And,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're talking about that again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we're getting way too deep into this.
We are.
Because we're here to talk about
it. It's because we started cold. We didn't warm up.
We're going to talk about the Eighth Doctor, and we'll have time with Chris a little bit later on. So my other guest today, a first-time guest on the show, and he's actually going to have his own episode coming up that getting your TARDIS and travel 2 weeks forward. And then Chris will be back.
And I'll be older.
He'll be older. But Chris Venegas is my other co-host today.
Hello.
Say hello, Chris.
Hi, how's it going, all of you?
Hi, Chris.
Now, my listeners are probably familiar with Martin. And so, Chris, can you give us a little background as to how and when Doctor Who first came into your life?
Oh, I would how say... How did that sound? That was really good. That was almost like
such a
inside the actor studio.
Yeah, right. So such a
pompous... So tell me. I would probably say 2 years ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
I have always wanted to watch the show. I think I've seen The Christmas Invasion way back when it first came out. And I always wanted to watch it, but I never had Netflix up until 2 years ago. And I was like, screw it. I'm going to go all out. I have a break from school. So I took 2 weeks, finished all of, 1 through 6.
Yeah.
And then, on demand, put on first half of season 7.
Oh, perfect.
So I was completely...
Caught up
by season 7,
Do you have and these are questions we ask typically. I think, Martin, we did this with you as well.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite doctor?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people always call me the 11th doctor.
Yeah, you do. You kind of have the style of an 11th doctor. So what you're saying is
the mannerisms. Like I'm very animated.
So what you're saying is number 9 is your favorite. Perfect.
Number 9.
Those ears get me every time.
Please don't do that. No Beatles references. So do you have a favorite episode? We're trying to just get your credentials.
I think for the 11th doctor, The Impossible Astronaut and The Day of the Moon are, my two favorites.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
All right.
Just because the silence always just scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Martin has
That's
a great story.
That's my least favorite of all Doctor... And not in a bad way, though. Just in a aliens scare the I don't really believe in aliens, but the concept of the alien with the big eyes and the big head, that really I have this, like, you know, logical fear of them. So when I saw that, I remember I texted you and I was like, I had to stop and turn the lights on. And I, you know, I normally don't do that, but
it always kind of reminds me of, like, they always remind me almost like an X-Files.
Yes. And I watched a lot of X-Files as a kid too. So.
And they used to scare the crap out of me, but I don't know why I still watched it. Yeah. Which is like, I'm not going to be able to sleep, but I guess I'll watch some X-Files.
You know what ruined me on Aliens? And I think the reason for it was, is there used to be a TV show when I was a kid. It was Friday nights, like at 8:30 or 9 o'clock. And it was called Sightings. And it was all, it was like a, they would report about like paranormal activity the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot. And it was a serious show. It wasn't like a you know, Ghost Hunters or anything. Like,
it was like kind of like Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, I mean, and it would creep the heck out of me. And I was just, I would still watch it all the time. And I think it was like before it got replaced by X-Files in their first season. That's why I turned on and X-Files was on. I was like, what is this? And then they moved it around. But yeah.
When I was a kid, the equivalent of that show was called In Search Of. And it was Leonard Nimoy was the narrator.
Oh,
and it was always like, In Search Of Bigfoot, In Search Of the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, I think I remember that show. Yeah,
ESP.
Yeah.
And it was there was like this weird thing in the 70s where they like all of that what we would now refer to as like cryptozoology or X-Files stuff.
Yeah.
All of that was like, you know, really big in the news. And they were, you know, the Bermuda Triangle was like, you know, people were still trying to figure out what the reason for that was, or the Loch Ness Monster and stuff like that. So that was always, it always came on Channel 9. Yeah. Which was at the time an independent, it was a weird, but it was always be on like Sunday nights. It'd be In Search Of, and I'd always be like, oh, they're going to talk about why the pyramids were built by aliens.
It was like the current affair of aliens.
Yeah, but I didn't care about that.
Hosted by.
I only wanted to see the monsters. I didn't care about when they would do like In Search Of automatic writing. Flip. Like, who cares? Like,
automatic what?
Automatic writing was like supposed to be like, I guess that like, the Ouija board is based on that concept that, like, you have, like, something's possessing you and, like, you're writing. You're actually, like, a messenger for the dead.
Oh.
Throwing it back to Doctor Who, it's like the Nightmare on Silver where he's playing chess to himself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, he has the control of the left arm.
Perfect example of that.
Way to bring it around.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. He puts a bow on it, and we're right back to
the guy with the ADHD.
And we're back.
Keeping us focused. That's how bad we are. The ADHD kid is keeping us on track. So we are here to talk about season 8, or the episode. The episode called Deep Breath, which is the season 8 premiere, the premiere of episode featuring Peter Capaldi, although we saw his eyebrows in Day of the Doctor.
Those attack eyebrows.
Yeah. So let's just give a broad overview first, and then we'll get into the details. Martin, did you like the episode? Yes, no?
You have mixed feelings about it, but I think overall I think it was a good way to start. You got to remember, it's the first episode of a long season. Not really long, but the jury's still out as to the whole season for me, because I think it was a decent start. How's that? It was a decent beginning.
Chris,
I really liked it. I thought it was just a great way to introduce the new Doctor, and it's always nice to, especially having Clara still there. It's not like when the 11th Doctor came in, it was completely new companion, new Doctor. You just had to get thrown in. With this one, it kind of like everyone was so in love with Matt Smith to see, like, especially Clara, to kind of see how she took the audience's reaction a little bit, like how normally it is with a companion.
Yeah. We'll get to that. That's an interesting point that you brought up. I felt the episode started out rough, but got better as it went along. And by the end, and the thing I think we'll all agree on is that none of that had to do with Peter Capaldi as the Doctor. He was awesome all the way through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think what my problems early on in the episode, and we'll go ahead and we'll just break the episode down. My problems early on was I think they wanted to try to do some of that Matt Smith slapstick in the beginning, yeah. and mm-hmm. it didn't quite fit with Capaldi, who's an older guy,
yeah,
and doesn't strike you as like a very slapsticky kind
of
guy.
No, he's more of like the dry,
yeah,
the classic British dry humor. Yeah,
he's more James Bond than he is.
I really like that, and but I think where the episode really gelled for me was in the scene where he was in the alleyway talking to the hobo.
Oh, that's one of my favorite scenes.
Which was awesome. And then with that, I think a continuation of that scene, I think the culmination of that scene is when you see him in the restaurant with Clara and they're piecing together what's happened. And you realize, at least for me, we've talked about it before, Chris, Martin and I have talked about it a lot, how we feel like Clara's been underwritten the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I think Moffat's idea at the end of season 7, once Clara was in, was we're going to take it back to an older style of Doctor Who where we're just going to throw you into the episode and, you know, you're half of the episode's already started. The story's going and here they come. Like, a good example of that would be the one on the submarine where the...
The Cold War. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they just, you know, not a bad episode, but the problem is, and what I liken it to is when you read the Sherlock Holmes stories, those scenes... They're all the stories are the same in that they almost always start. They're in their rooms, and Holmes is like giving some sort of demonstration to Watson and showing Watson, look how clever I am, and Watson's always amazed. But what those serve to do is they kind of ground the characters, and they didn't really do that with Clara last season, where they just kind of threw her in cold. You didn't know what she was about. You didn't know why she kept popping up. Why was she in the Asylum of the Daleks, and then. There was so much emphasis on her mystery that they really forgot to kind of fill her in as a character.
Yeah, I figured, now I noticed, like, she doesn't really do much.
But in this one, and in Day of the Doctor, I felt like she had a lot to do. And in the last one, I forgot, the name of the Doctor, the Christmas episode?
The Time of the Doctor.
She really had more to do in those two episodes, and they've continued it. And she really had to carry a lot of the episode this time because of what you were saying. Because she is the audience, she's that connection. She's the connection. You know, she takes the place of the audience.
Yeah, because it's the same thing. Like after every regeneration, it's like nope.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna like him. I'm not gonna like him. And they're like, okay.
They talked about that a little bit on After Who, which is yet another show. Hosted by Chris Hardwick, who is hard up for work. But
that guy needs a job.
But I like Chris Hardwick, so I'm positive on him. I'm glad. I think he's a high functioning nerd, and I think that's what we need to represent ourselves.
He's a high functioning nerd. He's making so much money, and he has an incredibly hot girlfriend.
No, he doesn't. They broke up.
What?
What is it? Dykstra?
Yeah, they broke up.
Yeah, yeah. What? Chloe Dykstra. Yeah.
Hi. Take that, Chris Hardwick.
I'm trying to get him on the show, man.
Oh, sorry.
Don't be talking about Chris Hardwick.
Sorry.
That was a nice reference.
I love Chris Hardwick. I'm going to save it for all of us.
I do, too. If you ever heard Chris Hardwick's... Chris Hardwick, I've told this joke before, has one of the greatest jokes of all time about the Twilight Zone in his stand-up. He said that the Twilight Zone should have just been called Nice Try, Asshole.
You know, I could never picture him as a nerd until I saw him in... What movie was that? He was... He used to be in that show, Singled Out.
Yeah,
it wasn't even a movie. It was like I was at home watching like ABC Family. It was Boy Meets World, and he had a cameo on that. He looks completely nerdy. And I was like, I'm buying it now. I'll let you have that title.
But he's highly functioning.
He is. Yeah.
I liked. I think for me, once the episode gelled, is when that scene in the restaurant, and I think immediately the chemistry that seemed to be lacking with Clara and Matt Smith, I don't think it was any fault of either actor. Mm. Again, I think it was the writing.
Mm.
I just think they didn't have a chemistry because there wasn't time for one to form. And I feel like immediately in that scene where he's kind of where they're calling her out on being self-centered and egotistical, there was so much in just those few lines.
Yeah.
And the way Capaldi, when she's in the restaurant and she's looking around, and all of a sudden she looks over and Capaldi's just staring at her. He's just like staring at him like, I'm like, oh my God, this is perfect. Like they're going to have such, and the interplay in that scene. So then to hear that she may be leaving the show at Christmas really bums me out because I feel like this is a relationship I really want to explore.
There was that moment in the restaurant where I really realized I was like, cause the first time I watched it at home and then I went to see it in theaters.
Oh, okay. So you saw it in the theater. Yeah.
Yeah. I went with Pond.
Oh yeah. We have a friend who we refer to as Pond. That's right.
But it was so weird because the first time I was watching it, I was like, God, he reminds me of someone. Like, I don't know why, but he just reminds me of another character.
Uh-huh.
And then it clicked to me on Monday night. He was like, he reminds me of House.
Oh, maybe a little bit.
Because he's very, like, he has that more of abrasive kind of
personality
about him. Like, he knows how brilliant he is, and he's just kind of...
And I love that there's that scene where she's making fun of him for being gray. Mm-hmm. And he plucks the hair out, and he says... He grabs one and he says, what are you doing? And he says, I took it. He said, it was out of place. I figured you'd want it killed. It's the way he delivers that line. He's just so, and I kind of excited about the doctor who's a little bit more abrasive. I like that idea. Because Tennant could get that way, but it would get to a point where Tennant would get pushed and then be that way. So it was almost like you brought it up, like, he was almost like being an a-hole because it was like he would get to a point and then he would just kind of explode.
Yeah.
Like, like Tennant. Whereas this guy, it's like you just...
He's already...
You know right away you don't mess with him. Like, you already know he's got that standoffish. And I already like that he's a little bit of a fast talker.
Yeah.
When the robots are talking about paradise, and he's like, "Look, I'm not going to make it either." Like, he's a lot of faster, but at the same time, he's being a jerk. Like, he's letting him know, like, "Look, there's no such thing. Like, you're gonna, this is, you know, it's not going to happen." And then he gets beat up, and then there's the potential that it's still up in the air, but we could be dealing with like a darker incarnation of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Did he or did he not kill the robot? What do you think? Do you think he, Martin, do you think he shoved the robot out?
I sure hope so.
I kind of hope so, too.
I kind of want that.
Half-Face Man really creeped me out the whole time.
Yeah.
All the way through.
Oh, my God. That effect was so good, and they kept showing that close-up where you could see him thinking.
Right.
You could see him processing, and it was just the way that was shot. And
and you got to give props to the actor, though, too, for doing
that. That was a really
straight,
great,
like, clockwork type of movement.
Yeah.
Some of the best creatures in, I mean, this was a more elaborate effect because you had to actually have the clockwork and stuff. But some of the best creatures in Doctor Who are, you know, think of the aliens in the silence, or the angels, the weeping angels, and now these clockwork who've made another appearance. It's really about their presence. It doesn't really have to be anything super elaborate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those aliens are just scary because think about it. They could be...
They don't really do anything in the corner right now. Yeah.
There could be, you know, the angels just sit there, but you see them every time you go to a place. We've all seen a statue like that.
I think the best Doctor Who, like, monsters have always been the ones that, like, play on that most, like, simplistic idea.
Yeah.
And then turn it completely around, like the living plastic, the Antons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the weeping angels and the silence. It's always like those...
Like, really simple. Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you feel like you've forgotten something, the silence could be there. And these new ones, don't breathe.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, yeah, yeah. God, that scene where she's trying not to breathe and they just show that tear coming out of her eye. And you're like, because think about it. Then you immediately start thinking, well, how long can I hold my breath?
All right.
Yeah.
Would I be able to make it out? And then I like the idea that, you know, because he kind of abandons her for a second, you know he's still going to be there. But it's the idea, it's the uncertainty of how is he going to pull this off? Like, what's this doctor? How's he going to think his way out of it?
Mm-hmm. I think it also throws the audience for a loop, too, because now you look at this doctor and you always were sure that the doctor would always be there, would never run away. But now you're like, I don't even know this guy. And that's kind of the reoccurring theme, as she even says it at the end. She's like, I don't even know you. And I think that made... That transferred that same feeling from that character over to the audience because you're like, where is he going? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah.
And so now you don't know, like, who is this doctor? Is he?
He's also not himself yet.
Right,
he's
right.
Also still...
So now that, and then feel like he's more like, okay, I'm not going to hold your hand. You've been with me for how long now?
And like, that I do like about him.
He's like, I'm not holding your hand anymore. You're a big
girl. Not her boyfriend anymore.
Yeah.
I love that. And you know what's weird? You brought that up, Chris. You brought that up about the idea that Clara was in love with, you know, I never quite got that idea, and that's kind of why I like Clara. Clara reminded me of a little bit of Martha Jones, and that Martha Jones kind of started out being like this girl who, like, oh, you know, I'm in love with you, but Martha Jones is the first one to walk away and go, you know what, I don't need to do this with you anymore. Yeah. I've got my own life. And I kind of had that feeling with Clara, too.
Yeah, especially the fact that she's a teacher now.
You know, and she's got her own thing going on.
She's got her own thing. And
it wasn't like with Rory. I think with Rory and Pond, you saw them kind of waiting around for the doctor, and every time he'd show up, like, why, where have you been?
Yeah.
Why is it taking you so long? Mm-hmm. And then in the beginning of Name of the Doctor, she's doing her own thing, and then somebody's like, the doctor called for you, and she gets on her motorcycle, and she goes to see him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she's happy to see him, but at the same time, she's living her life.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that about her. So, again, I feel like this relationship is ripe for exploration. This combination of companion and doctor, I think, is going to be awesome. And if she does leave at Christmas, I'm going to be so bummed out
because
I feel like she deserves a full year where she's being written better.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think she's a good actress. I think she pulls it off. I like that she didn't want to give it up, that he was basically calling her self-centered and
the control freak. I'm not a control freak. You're the boss.
I love it. I like that idea that like she's kind of like, you know, that and she's not afraid to give him a few digs either.
And that's kind of fun to watch
too. I'm going to be really, really bummed that if they decide that she's not going to be on it anymore. Cause I think Martin and I have talked about this, Chris, and I don't know how you feel. I kind of like the Doctor. I loved Matt Smith's characterization, but I thought the writing was better with Russell Davis when Russell Davis was running the show and Moffat was writing specific episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think since he's taking it over, he's really, really, and I see the same thing in Sherlock, where he's kind of like he kind of does this thing where it's like, well, these are my characters now, and I'm going to do.
Whatever the hell I want with them,
and everybody better just go along. Because there's some things I love Sherlock, and I love the characterization that Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman bring to it. Mm-hmm. But there's some stuff in there that Sherlock Holmes would never do.
Yeah,
and I feel that they're just like, well, we're writing it now, so too bad. And I think that it's enough. There's enough fanboys on it, not to use the term kind of disparagingly, but there's enough fanboys on it now that they're going to go with whatever. He does.
Yeah, because everyone's still going to watch it.
Yeah, and I don't want to, spoiler alert, but the end of the season 3 finale of Sherlock, when Sherlock just takes the gun and shoots the guy,
he's like,
he would never do that. That's
I'm not a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a high-functioning sociopath.
That's not the Sherlock Holmes of the books, and I know people, well, this isn't the books. But at the same time, I feel like you want to stay true to that character, and it's such a cop-out way for Sherlock Holmes to solve something.
Yeah.
He would never just be like, well, you know.
It's basically like Moffat just kind of got stuck, and it was like, okay, defeat this villain for the episode, and you're just like, well, screw it.
Yeah. And
he's going to shoot him.
Yeah.
When Conan Doyle would back himself into a corner like that, there's one episode in particular where he goes up against a guy who's who's also a master. Is he a blackmailer? This guy marries for money and then he murders his wives. And he's like, Sherlock Holmes, like, he's just as smart. And he has like these, he has Sherlock Holmes beaten. Sherlock Holmes is like recuperating, and he sends Watson in to like distract him. I think he plays like a collector, because this guy's like into fine art, and so he goes and he sends him in there as an art collector. And as Watson's distracting him, Holmes breaks in and steals his diary that he keeps of all these women that he's killed. You know, as he's caught like dead to rights, like he's about to shoot Sherlock Holmes, and one of his ex. He had an affair with a woman, and when he was done with her, he threw acid on her and scarred her. So at the end of the thing, she throws vitriol in his face, which is acid. So that's how, like, that's, I think that's what they were grasping for in that, not to get too far off. But I think since they couldn't write, they were out of it. They're like, we'll just have him shoot the character.
Yeah.
And I feel like
it's not like he actually had a physical book with him. Like, that whole Magnuson had the actual.
Everything
ball.
Was in his brain.
Everything was
which
in his brain.
Which was a great idea.
That was a great idea.
Which is a great idea. But now, how do you kill the brain while you shoot like a zombie? You shoot it, which felt like kind of a cop out. And I felt like Moffat does that a lot with Doctor Who. I feel like sometimes he's just like, well, accept this because I'm the person writing it.
Yeah.
And whereas you as a fan go, but we've seen this done so much better before.
Yeah.
And I feel like Moffat's kind of like drops the ball that way a lot. Do you feel that way too? Or do
I
you feel
like Moffat, especially since Moffat, you know, with Russell Davies, he did the boldest thing. It was like making the Doctor the last Time Lord, you know, because of the Time War.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one knew what the hell was going on, because it was like, wait, well, where's everyone else kind of thing. I think with Moffat, though, he's the one that has kind of changed the whole canon of the show the most.
Uh-huh.
Especially with Day of the Doctor.
Yeah.
like, you know,
adding, kind of changing the regeneration.
Changing the regeneration and doing the whole saving Gallifrey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which, yeah, he did. He did do that a lot. And there's a lot of cool stuff he's done. But at the same time, Martin and I are always exasperated at the storytelling sometimes.
And he said it himself, too. He's like, there's so much story to pack in 1 hour. And, you know, it just seems like you said, like, there's, it's just rushed. It seems like, mm-hmm. you know.
The start of this episode had that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where we're just going to throw in a dinosaur because it looks cool, and then there's going to be something that ties it together because they destroy it for its optic nerve. But I feel like this, and I was watching the Day of the Doctor. He's doing these things now where he knows it's going to play in a movie theater.
Yeah.
And so it's like, we're going to do this really big opening, but it doesn't really serve the story that much. And so, you know, it's like, it's cool if you go see it in the theater. How was it in the theater, by the way?
It was actually pretty good. They had an exclusive, like, prequel kind of thing, and it was with Strax. And he kind of was like, just describing each doctor, each regeneration of the doctor. And I couldn't stop laughing because Strax has become one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Listen, boy.
After deep breath. Like, you know. Strax is
pretty cool.
Throwing the newspaper at Clara.
Yeah.
Smacking her right in the face. Yeah,
I had an interesting theory as to why he had dinosaurs in this episode, though. Because one of Moffat's, or one of the, you know, I would say Moffat's Matt Smith's most popular episodes was the dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Yeah. And you know what? That was an episode that could have been terrible. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome because you introduced Rory's dad was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Rory's dad was awesome. And, you know, there is a little bit of like, what the hell is going on here? Mm-hmm. But by the end, they had explained it all. And it was a fun, fun episode.
It was, yeah.
I think sometimes Moffat forgets to have fun.
Yeah.
I think that's what his problem is.
I think one of my favorite Amy moments is possibly like when, you know, the Nefertiti is like walking and she's like, are you a Queen Amy? And then she has that look. Yes.
And, you know, if you want more of Amy Pond, of course, watch Guardians of the Galaxy. Summer's biggest movie. She plays Nebula. You know what was distracting about that movie is I kept trying to hear her accent.
Yeah.
And there's one part where she says, we've been boarded. And you hear her try not to sound Scottish. It's really, really funny.
She has a thick Scottish accent.
She does have a thick Scottish
accent.
Really, and another thing about Capaldi, as we're supposed to, I love that they're letting him be Scottish.
Yeah.
It bums me out, though, that they didn't let David Tennant be Scottish.
Mm-hmm. But like for one episode.
Yeah, just for one episode. But I love that he's Scottish, and I think they're going to play a lot with that.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll complain about everything because I'm Scottish.
Because I'm Scottish, yeah.
But he does that great thing where he does that thing. He's like, I'm Scottish. I'm Scottish. Oh. And he's like, oh.
Scottish.
Oh.
I'm going to be cross with people.
Look at these eyebrows.
I do love doing different accents and impressions. Yeah. So, yeah. Like, Scottish is not one of my bigger things, but I know, like, more I watch Capaldi.
Well, just
like,
brave.
I'll start doing it naturally.
Yeah. A good place to start. It's always fun to do Scottish, especially when you're brown.
Don't say Braveheart.
No. Yeah, you do Alovia.
Always have.
I'm going to marry you someday. And then you go from there and you get into Groundskeeper Willie.
But Braveheart's notorious for being terrible with their Scottish accent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, my ground zero for me was always Star Trek. Which is a Canadian guy doing a Scottish accent. Scott here, Captain.
I just saw like it was like The Simpsons. You know, it's playing on FXX, and Groundskeeper Willie's all like when they sneak into the school to steal the fat. He's like,
oh yeah, yeah.
He's like, my retirement fat. So right now I just heard that. I was like grease or something. My retirement grease.
I think the one I'm able to do more is the attack eyebrows bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, let's hear you do it. Let's hear you do it.
Wait, hang on. He's like, look at these eyebrows. They're attack eyebrows. You can take off bottle tops of these.
That's pretty good.
Is it?
That is pretty
good. Yeah, because I go for the brogue. I just go for the look. Like you're from the Highlands. Come down here and have some haggis with me. Like you're in How to Train Your Dragon 2. So you do more of like that. You have like a sophisticated Scot. Like you're from Edinburgh.
Yeah,
you're from a university town.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great scene. I don't know if you've ever seen in. I'll always do this to this day. The Scottish accent that always pops in my head is whenever I have computer trouble. Did you ever see Star Trek IV?
No.
Where they time travel. The real quick scene, they time travel back to get
Isn't that where they go to, like, the 1980s version of San Francisco? And Spock has to wear, like, that ridiculous headband.
So to cover his ears. A probe hits Earth with, like, this radio wave, the radio wave that's so powerful that it's causing tidal waves, all this stuff. And they can't figure out who it's sending a message to. And it actually looks like the ship from Rendezvous with Rama that I was telling you about.
Oh, okay.
Arthur C. Clarke's. But anyway, they figure out, Spock figures out that it's sending a message to the ocean and it's trying to contact whales that have been extinct. So it's this whole conservation message. Oh. So they have to travel back to the 80s to pick up whales and bring them back to the future so they can contact this thing so it'll go away. So they can just... The aliens don't understand why it's not answering the call.
Right. And so I just turn up the volume.
So, well, there's no whales. There's no...
I'm just going to text them.
There are humpback whales. They're sending a message specifically to humpback whales, and there's no humpback whales left to answer.
Yeah.
So they have this ship, and they're trying to build a tank, so they send Scotty to, like, this place that builds, like basically, like thick...
How do you bring a humpback whale back through time?
Well, you have to watch... why you need Scotty.
They're
going to build a tank in the ship.
Whales back sounds a little wacky.
It is probably the best loved of all the original Star Trek
movies. Is it really?
It is.
Oh, okay.
It's because it's played for laughs. Star Trek 2 is the best with Ravnica. Okay. But Star Trek 4 is the one that, like, if you've never seen a Star Trek movie and you show it to somebody, they'll like it. Because basically a comedy.
But, was it meant as a comedy?
Yes, it was. It was meant to be a film.
I mean, so there's the whole premise. You're bringing back whales.
Why did you pick whales?
So they're going to build a big tank. And Scotty has to go, because in the future, of course, they have something called transparent aluminum, which is thin but can hold a lot of weight. So they want to build a tank, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Scotty's got to go and figure out how to do this with, like, 20th century, like, polymers. So he goes to this place where they're making, like, these polymer, like, the tanks you would see in, like, SeaWorld or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get him to, like, give him this stuff, like, give him, like, these huge sheets so they can use it. And Scotty's like... The guy's like, well, why should I give it to you? And he's playing a professor from Edinburgh. And Scotty's like, well, if you give me your computer, like, I'll give you the thing for something we call transparent aluminum. Like I'll show you how to do this. And the guy's like, okay.
Yeah.
So he's like, here's my computer. And then, so Scotty sits down. It's like this ancient Mac now. It's like this 88 Mac.
Yeah.
And Scotty just goes, computer? Hello, computer, because they all talk to
him. Oh, yeah.
It's the future. It's just the way he does it. So whenever my computer goes wrong, I always go, computer, hello, computer. And then, like, the next bit is he's like, use the mouse. So he picks up the mouse, which is still wired, and he's like talking into it like a walkie-talkie. He's like, computer. So that's a long way to go for that joke. But when I hear that in my head, that's the Scottish accent. I still hear. But so do you gentlemen think that we are going to? Do you think that Capaldi will be embraced? I think of this consensus among us here is that we've already embraced him as the Doctor. I already can't wait to see more.
As soon as I heard, like, he was such a longtime fan, and it was just because I figured Tennant was the same way.
Yeah.
And look how Tennant's become one of the most, if not the most popular Doctor.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. You're going to play something from your childhood. It's like your childhood hero that you finally got to play.
Did you watch After Who, Martin?
Was it with Chris Hardwick?
Yeah.
No. Then no.
Was it with that guy that I kind of hate now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark Gatiss, who plays Mycroft on Sherlock.
Yeah.
He said he was telling the story because he's one of the producers of Doctor Who. He told the story. He had Capaldi on. They brought him to tour the set of Doctor Who. And this is... They already had the idea that they were going to hire him when Matt Smith left. But he didn't know.
Okay.
Capaldi had no idea. And so Capaldi's like, have you ever thought about playing Doctor Who? And Gatiss is like, yeah, you know, there's no way that's going to happen. It's just not in the cards for me right now. He's like, what about you? And Capaldi told him, oh, yeah. He's like, I always wanted to, but, you know... That ship has sailed. Like, I'm too old now.
Really?
And that, Gatiss was just like, oh my God. Like,
that's
he
awesome.
Wanted to tell him, like, right there. So there you already have, like, you have an appreciation for the guy. Like you said, he's a fan.
That's pretty cool.
How do you guys think this is going to wash with, and I hate to use this term, but there are a lot of people who jumped on board, this is what I wanted to bring up with the Matt Smith goodbye scene. There were a lot of people who jumped on the Matt Smith bandwagon, and not to sound sexist, but a lot of them are girls because Oh, he's adorable. He's kind of an adorable. Yeah.
Well, not just Matt Smith. I think David Tennant too. I think there was a lot of.
He's a sexy doctor. But I think Matt Smith definitely. I think Matt Smith rode the wave that kind of Tennant and Eccleston kind of created.
Yeah.
Like Matt Smith rode the height of that wave, mm-hmm. because by the time, I think Tennant's Doctor was so popular that by the time it came time to for Matt Smith to be, that's mm-hmm. when you were seeing the billboards. And they were starting to advertise it more.
Yeah.
And more Americans were going, well, who's what's this Doctor Who thing? Yeah, like, what is this about?
By season five, especially by season six.
Yeah.
I agree with that, but I would tweak it a little bit in this sense. It's not so much the girls as I think Matt Smith brought the younger crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what Moffat is afraid of losing. And it felt like in this last episode, he was kind of trying to, they kind of went over it and over it again. You know, I told you they kind of beat the whole he's an older doctor with a stick.
Yeah.
It was just like okay, we get it, he's older. But it was almost like even that scene at the end, it was almost like it was Moffat begging the younger audience, because the older audience that had been through Eccleston and Tennant, we're a little bit more open minded. Yeah. We're like, okay, well, this worked out, you know, twice before. Let's try it again. Let's see.
To mention the fact that if you even go back into the classic Doctor Who,
right. They're all older. I think that last scene where spoilers, where she gets a call from Eleven, and he's like pretty much begging her to like help the new version of him. I think that that was more directed at the audience. I think that that was more Moffat at the younger crowd going, give him a try.
Yeah.
Give him a chance.
That's what it felt like to me, because other doctors, mm-hmm. they've never done that with any other doctor.
No.
I mean, they've brought him back and they've done things like the five doctors and the mm-hmm. three doctors and the day of the doctor. But that was the first time one ever made an appearance during his own regenerate, like during the next. And so I wasn't sure how I felt about it. But to me, it felt more like the same thing where it's like, hey guys, it's still the same show. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. You know, it's just going to be a different guy. I felt like, to me, it kind of, and I love Matt Smith, but to me, that scene kind of was almost like, I don't know if it was necessary.
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw him, I was like, oh my God, Matt Smith's back. So I kind of like, Time of the Doctor is just like one of those episodes, like, I'll watch here and there, mm-hmm. just because I love Matt Smith so much, like, as a doctor, because he's my doctor.
Yeah.
So that one is always hard to watch for me, because, like, any Whovian can tell you.
Right.
We get emotionally involved in these shows.
Hey, I feel the same about in the end of Doctor Who and the End of Time.
Yeah.
Exact same way about it. End of Time.
I'll even do that too. It's just like, I don't want to go. And you're just like, no.
Yeah.
Don't Which, go.
By the way, really quick side note. You know, Mark Gatiss, he wrote a movie about Doctor Who called Adventures in Space and Time.
Yeah.
And there's a scene there where, you know, they tell the first doctor, they tell him they don't want, what's his name, Hartnell?
William Hartnell, yeah.
William Hartnell. And they tell him, like, you know, they've talked about how they're going to replace him. And he's sitting by the fireplace, and he's like, well, it's what's best. And then he just goes, I don't want to go. And he starts crying. Yeah. And I was like, not you too.
That one, I remember watching that too. It was like, all right, great job, guys.
That was
great
pretty,
job.
Yeah.
That was a really cool peek. And if you haven't seen it, Whovians, it is called An Adventure in Time and Space. And it's
can I talk about the ending?
You can do a spoiler. I'll play spoiler.
When William Hartnell's fight, like, his last day on set, and he's just kind of looking at the TARDIS and, like, kind of flipping up the switches. And then he looks over, and it looks like he's facing out. And then you see Matt Smith.
Yes.
Go to hell, guys.
Well, yeah. Who would have known that 50? But it really is a great insight into what it took to get that show off the ground.
Yeah. Right,
and here we are, 50 years later, talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And excited that, you know, and excited because it's getting to a point now where, you know, this show could get kind of long in the tooth if they don't make some. And I think this is a huge step in the right direction with coming up with bringing Capaldi in, and we'll see. Hopefully, we'll keep Claire around.
Yeah, but, I would love to see though, like. 10, 11, and 12 all working together.
Yeah, that would be great. And maybe get 9 in there, damn it. Come on, Eccleston. If you made G.I. Joe, you can come back and do it, goddamn.
Right. If you made Thor, that
Thor 2.
Thor 2.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't that bad in Thor 2.
He wasn't that bad.
It was just really, barely in it. It just,
well, there you go. That's why.
It just wasn't a great movie. All right, guys. Well, thanks for hanging out with us. And so my consensus is I'm going to give this a solid 7. And I think it started out really rough. It's that first 30 minutes for me didn't do a lot for me. I didn't like him falling out of the tree. I didn't like the whole being on the horse.
I got to say, though, like, real quick, like how he's this is the most physical I've ever seen a doctor coming off of regeneration.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm.
Like you've seen Tennant, and he was pretty much past that for most of the episode.
But I think it's because he had a lot of the Matt Smith left in him.
Yeah.
And then I think we're starting to see there's that one great scene where he's telling where he's kind of like trying to hold off the automatons.
Oh, yeah.
And he does that thing where he's almost doing like the Rock. Where he's going, no, he's like, he points like that.
Yeah.
He does that point with like kind of like the Rock on symbol.
Like the Spidey.
Like that's his, like, that's going to be his shtick. I think he's going to be like, no, stop. He's going to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so you kind of see him become more of Capaldi as the episode goes on.
Yeah, that was done really well.
Yeah, so I like I said, the first 30 minutes, just because you're trying to figure out what's going on, and I don't know. I like dinosaurs, but I just didn't feel like it fit. So I give it a 7.
You know, I think, you know, the scene where I think he fully matured into the doctor he's going to be, where it was just like, I saw it just click, was my favorite scene in the whole show, was where he's sitting down, and maybe it's just the drunk in me that likes this scene, but he's got like the two glasses, he poured
a drink. Drinking.
And he's drinking.
That's I gotta hand it to him, the first doctor to drink.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
And I gotta give it up to you, because I'm a drunk too.
So. But I love that, because it's so James Bond. He's like, he's like, I'm afraid I might have to kill you. I thought you might enjoy the drink first. I was like, it's so great.
I feel like that's a very Scottish thing to
do. Yeah, it's very, and it's also very like proper. Like, I might have to kill you. Let's have a drink.
It recalled very much. You would say James Bond, and it reminded me of Holmes meeting Moriarty and saying, you know, if I have to kill you, so be it. But you know, I'm gonna deal with you. And if it means having to kill myself to do it, so be it. But this is the way it's. But it's done in this very proper, very gentlemanly,
very pistols at dawn type of thing.
It's a very good way to like size up your opponent too. So it's kind of like,
let's have a drink. Yeah. It looked like he was having something nice out of a decanter.
Back in the Victorian stuff. Like a nice scotch.
Maybe a scotch.
And I was like,
Yeah. So, well, I what did you give the episode overall, Martin?
I agree with your analysis that the beginning was a little. I said that I like the goofiness in Doctor, because it has to have that. Doctor Who can't be serious all the time.
Yeah.
But the slapsticky falling through the trees, and I think Matt Smith was more like he was more like hyperactive. He was more like, you know, whereas Capaldi I think is a little bit more reserved. So I think you're gonna see a little bit more serious from Capaldi. But I think that the whole slapsticky falling through the, you know, landing on the horse or whatever, yeah, all that stuff was just unnecessary. Yeah. So I think I'm going to give it like a 7.
Okay.
But the parts that were good.
Were awesome.
You know,
on pars with the best, some of the best moments of the show. How about you, Chris?
I'm going to be the one. Can I call it? Can I say it's a 12?
Yeah, there's confusion.
No, I think I'll give it an 8.
You can disagree. That's fine. We're not mad.
I just wanted to throw in the 12 humor. Good.
Anybody? No.
Anybody?
Crickets.
Is this thing?
I'll give it an 8, just because it was just for me. Like you said, it was like the first 30 minutes were kind of like okay, but like once everything started to go, like, it just showed a completely new, like, doctor. And, like, a serious one. Because I love the show House. And like I was saying before, he reminds me of House. Especially in the restaurant. When he's like, look. No, don't look. Look without looking. And I was like, okay, he's such kind of pretty much an asshole. And there are times where I'm like that, too. Yeah. So it's kind of like...
You know, I think he's getting that impatience that the first doctor had.
Yeah.
With people who aren't as smart as he, or who don't catch on as quick as he does. And that's an interesting way to take that character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
that's something we don't usually see from the doctor.
Yeah. We haven't seen in years and years and years. Because these other doctors have been kind of caretakers.
Yeah.
And you brought up the point now where one of you brought it up where it's like, okay, you've been with me long enough now.
Yeah.
I don't need to coddle you.
And then, like, especially that line, he goes, I wish Amy was here.
Yeah.
Because, like, Amy knew. Yeah. I don't know if it was just the Scottish the Scottish thing between them, but yeah. Well, now, but yeah, I feel like it was one of those lines where it's kind of like, I wish Amy was here because she knows what to do.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, guys. So we're looking forward to it, and we'll probably do one of these at the end of the season. We'll reconvene and we'll figure out what happens at the end of this run. What is it? Is it how many episodes? 12? 8?
12. No. 12, and then the Christmas.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll probably be back before the Christmas special.
We didn't glance over Missy.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you know what? Let's do that. Who are your theory? What is your theory? Who is this lady?
I read a lot of the fan theories, mm-hmm. and the most interesting one is that she's the Ronnie. You remember the Ronnie from...
There's just silence.
Silence. Silence. she was around for the 7th Doctor, like the 6th and 7th Doctor.
Oh, my God. Like that far back?
Yeah.
Wow.
She was like another Time Lord. She was like the woman Time Lord.
Wow.
So she was kind of the equivalent of the Master.
But a female.
But female.
So what is heaven, do you guys think? Where is that?
I don't know. Someone posted a picture yesterday. I think it was on Instagram. How that wellness center in season 6 where Amy is like, you know.
Trapped
there. Right.
That's
like
what I thought it was.
That's what I thought
yeah.
it was, too.
Just like that. And someone did a comparison shot. And I was like, oh, my God, it looks just like that.
Because she reminded me of the lady that kept looking in the lady with the eye patch. That kept looking in
Madame
the...
Madame Gavari.
That's who she reminded me of. That's who she reminded me of. And I got that vibe from her.
And then there was another theory that she's the Master. She's the new Master as a woman.
That would be awesome.
So I was like, oh. She has that bit of madness.
So instead of saying, instead of doing what everybody's been doing and making the Doctor a woman, it's like, okay, we'll meet you halfway
and
make the Master a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea. Yeah. All right, guys.
All right.
We're gonna wrap this up, and we will say until the next time this panel convenes,
mm-hmm.
we, like you said, probably at the end of the season. Thank you very much, Chris, for joining us. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you for having me.
Yep.
And we will... Oh, no. I don't say that. I say this transmission ends now. But I feel like we should say something else in honor of the Doctor.
I don't want to go.
I was going to throw it back with Tron and go end of line.
End of number 9. Number 9.
Allons-y.
Good night, Raggedy Man.
Good night.
Yeah. Do it in a Scottish accent.
Oh, crap.
As a girl.
Oh, I can't do that.
Good night. Good night, Raggedy Man.
Good night, Raggedy Man.
Guys, we'll catch you on the flip side.